son of Uncle Sammy's boys. You have no use for any noise. You want every Yankee heart from coast to coast. Straighter than a gladiator, you're the world's big meat.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
God bless America again. You must know the trouble that she's in.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic.
Intelligence gets in the way. Yeah, it gets in the way. You know it gets in the way. And if you want to be happy, be like Forrest Gump every day.
Good evening, fellow citizens. This is the voice of the illegal radio to which you are forbidden to listen under penalty of death.
Hold on. Listen to the news.
You got a problem with the news now?
Yeah, I got a big goddamn problem with the news. You ready for this? The news is completely manipulated. Everything you hear every single day is designed by corporate media to do one thing and one thing only.
Jesus.
To keep you living in fear.
Oh, fear?
Total fear. Fear so you'll go out and you'll spend money on things. Things you probably don't even need. Things you probably already have six of, so that their advertisers can keep buying ads on their stations.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Let me start with a bold statement. We are not living in the country that most of us are trained to think we live in. It's important to clear this up. This lesson looks at the pieces of American history that historians have ignored, probably because they don't understand the monetary system. This system has converted us into a financial empire. American history suggests we started a country on free principles that last to this day, where the population rules. But if that's the case, why do both political parties constantly do things that a massive majority of the people don't want?
You're not in Kansas anymore.
I've been walking a tightrope between fact and fiction. Been wrestling with demons in small bottle prisons. Been talking to sinners who claim to be Christian. Been shouting at leaders who claim to be listening. And the pendulum swings from the left to the right. As momentum increases, the need for the fight. Like a moment of blindness and a lifetime of sight. And I am caught somewhere in the middle. Of his people, saw a camel that passed through the eye of a needle, saw a group of old men whose money was evil, saw a cross breaking free from the cage of steeple, saw beggars and cripples dying in squalor, a son whose sins had exceeded his father, saw a nation of sleepers.
Oh, well, see, here's the nice thing. The wonderful thing about the Fed is that it has no constraints or limits. And to suggest that the Federal Reserve is getting rich or the Bank of England is getting rich is really not to draw the picture. It is that the owners of these institutions funnel the money to themselves. It is not the institutions themselves, but the, as Thomas Jefferson put it, the corporations that will grow up around them. So they set up these quasi-public corporations, and then they do business with private corporations that make tons of money in the process. In the case of Goldman Sachs, their profits are obscene.
Instead, all power in the system is driven by the dollar. It aligns everything in the pyramid. It does this because it actually is not a sovereign U.S. dollar, but it's instead a debt instrument of the Federal Reserve. This surprises some people because the dollar is just something that sort of pumps out of ATM machines as if it's part of nature, but of course it's not. It's man-made product, managed by people just like any other corporate product.
Call a greenback dollar bill. just a little piece of paper coated with chlorophyll.
The original power structure in the Republic is diagrammed here, with the states voluntarily organized around a central governing document. The states are drawn as pyramids for a deliberate reason. A pyramid represents an economic engine and growth potential, and political and social power. Each state had its own ruling class, merchant class, and working class. States had their own banks, Main Street businesses, and towns and neighborhoods where people exerted power together in local communities. The point is that the states were autonomous units, and political power and economic growth engine were not at the federal level. This was a good mix between Jeffersonian ideals and Hamiltonian principles. Jefferson represented what I'll call horizontal forces. He was from rural, agrarian interests and wanted to keep power distributed so that horizontal relationships between people and local community would be the basis for bottom-up power in the Republic. Hamilton represented vertical forces. He was connected with wealthy urban interests and wanted power and wealth to be able to consolidate vertically to drive economic growth.
Listen to the sound that you hear like an echo in your head. There's a strange vibration rising now from the heart of America, America. Listen to the sound of the drum calling players to the game of the new.
Walking around like zombies. I don't think we're even aware of ourselves or our own reaction to things. We're just going around all day like unconscious machines, and meanwhile there's all of this rage and worry and uneasiness just building up and building up inside us.
That's right. It just builds up. And then it just leaps out inappropriately.
Listen to the sound of applause in a chamber full of men selling out their people as they play.
To explain the strategic perspective on the current world scene, because the media doesn't help. And even from some good news sources out there like some economic blogs, we just get rapid-fire noise about markets, and they sort of chalk everything up to corruption and government incompetence, but the truth is actually much more sophisticated. We're undergoing a massive strategic global transition. A few in the alternative media describe it using a bunch of emotion and hype, which is fine and works for a lot of people. But I wanted to do it in a way that would communicate to a different type of audience and attract people who think analytically and would prefer to avoid theatrics. And the first thing to remember is that we're all stuck in a system that must continually grow just based on the math of the bond market. It's pushed beyond towns, counties, and states, and has been pushing against nations for a long time to the point where it's now trying to establish a single integrated global system. And now, I got to deal with the typical objections to this immediately, because many people will be inclined to turn off the video at this point. They may call this ridiculous because they've heard versions of this New World Order presented with a bunch of theatrical hype. So, of course, they don't believe it. But I will just try to present the facts based on the monetary, corporate, and governance systems we're living in and interpret them through the lens of the history we saw in Lesson 1. And some say this whole thing is impossible, you know, like the world's too big. Well, it's pretty much already happened on the economic dimension, so they're either not paying attention or they aren't thinking at the right level in terms of scale, which you hopefully remember from Lesson 4. And others say they're too much of a believer in chaos theory to accept this. But actually, chaos theory says the exact opposite. It suggests that what we may perceive as random chaos is actually a very intricate, even predictable pattern of ripple effects stemming from a central cause or tweak to the system. And I'd suggest that's exactly what's happening in the world. The corporate media portrays nothing but the random chaos on the nightly news. But in point of fact, we are hearing the intricately patterned ripple effects of a system dominated by a few who use leverage to make powerful changes. And I'll try to illustrate the intricate pattern in this lesson. Finally, others say this is conspiracy theory. Nope, it's math. And math that requires exponential debt growth and creates incredible leverage. This is the basic math of the bond market that has transcended nation states. And to call it conspiracy is to highlight the fact that we are not taught the truth about the world's financial system. The leverage created by that system has been used to standardize governments, collapse economies, establish dollar hegemony, secure ownership rights over natural resources, and basically increase the pyramid of the Anglo-banking and corporate system. Mega levels of debt is used to pull off corporate takeovers of governments, just like debt was used in the 80s to pull off corporate takeovers of companies. In other words, leverage is used to bring other countries that might be republics or another form of government into the top-down financial empire system. And it typically does this through supposed financial crises. This is how the Anglo-American empire grows externally. It's grown a lot internally by increasing the scale and velocity of the system, but it grows externally by economically conquering countries, which is way more effective than using the military. We've seen this in a multitude of countries in the past. Each of these was reported in the media as a crisis caused by governments that was fixed by the supposedly responsible financiers. Will we ever learn? How many times will the same story be repeated before people bother to notice the common pattern? The truth is that these countries were attacked by the financiers in the first place, and typically the governments had no idea what was happening to them, or they were bought off. And what was almost never reported was how the structure of each of these countries has changed as a result of the crisis. How its resources were handed over to corporate institutions. How the country was put into even more debt from the IMF and commercial banks like JPMorgan Chase, and all the other aspects of restructuring that occurred coming out of these crises. The same thing is going to happen in other countries. We'll see it in these European countries. We'll see it eventually in the bigger developed countries of Europe. And we'll see it in the United States. And this will bring the rest of the world into a depression, which will be used in the same way the Great Depression of the 20th century was used, as we saw in Lesson 1, to force nations to submit to a new debt-based system.
Well, yeah, inflation is a way to increase the wealth and income gap and to create a feudal aristocratic class. And that's the, you know, inflation and control of the money supply and the way that the monetary way it works, you know, back in the medieval days and the dark ages with kings and lords and princes and whatnot, with indentured servants who are perpetually in debt. And the aristocratic lords. I mean, this is what America yearns for. This is why I'm saying that the experiment to leave Germany, as I did, my family did 300 years ago, to go to America, was a complete waste of time because the idea was to go to Pennsylvania. We were invited by William Penn to help create Pennsylvania, which was for religious freedom because we were tired of the religious wars 300 years ago in Europe, and you know, which led to the colonies banding together and staging a war of independence against Britain, the colonial ruler. Okay, 220 years later, everyone in the country, all of my ancestors, and especially around Pennsylvania, in the Pennsylvania area, Lancaster, Pennsylvania area, if you go to the local cemetery, you'll see dozens and dozens, scores and scores of Kaisers buried there. You know, all of that work and hope to create a democratic free society has been completely obliterated within 8 years as Bush has overturned civil rights, that Wall Street's overturned contract law, and we're back to usurious feudal lords who are subjugating the people and enslaving them with debt.
To chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa, Morgan Stanley too. In debt we trust, so pay we must, we owe it all to you.
Understanding the dollar. That means more than knowing what a dollar bill looks like or what a silver dollar is.
We're bored. We're all bored now. But has it ever occurred to you, Wally, that the process that creates this boredom that we see in the world now may very well be a self-perpetuating, unconscious form of brainwashing created by a world totalitarian government based on money? And that all of this is much more dangerous than one thinks? And it's not just a question of individual survival, Wally, but that somebody who's bored is asleep, and somebody who's asleep will not say no? See, I keep meeting these people. I mean, just a few days ago, I met this man whom I greatly admire. He's a Swedish physicist, Gustav Bjornstrand. And he told me that he no longer watches television, he doesn't read newspapers, and he doesn't read magazines. He's completely cut them out of his life because he really does feel that we're living in some kind of Orwellian nightmare now, and that everything that you hear now contributes to turning you into a robot.
The global financiers will try to collapse nations to control the outcome here by using the same tactic we saw in Lesson 1 to create the American financial empire. A major global depression is on the way, as I mentioned a couple slides back, as the U.S. goes into a financial crisis. This will cripple the nations like the Great Depression crippled the states. And along with depressions come global wars. So we will see World War III launched by the Anglo-American Empire against Iran and the powers that come to its aid. The world's population and most nations will be demoralized and fairly powerless to solve the problem, which will allow for a new potential pyramid to be created, just like we saw in Lesson 1. A new global currency, which will be debt-based, of course, will be introduced in order to crank up a new global debt machine. And before that machine can launch, a new global tax engine needs to be created. We've seen glimpses of that in the press, that proposed banking tax, internet tax, carbon tax and transaction tax, all sorts of taxes which would be used to fuel a new global government. But it's not really been created yet. And my guess is that it won't be accepted by much of the world until they experience some of this pain from Depression 2.0 and World War III. But once it's established, the machine will be ready to crank up the 21st century with a new elite banking layer, which will, by the way, be largely centered in Asia. The largest banks are now in China. Asian financial institutions have a massive amount of the world's assets at this point, while the Western nations and institutions have an equally massive amount of debt. The G2 relationship plays a critical role here. It's the bankers' way of tying the U.S. and China together, so they will have control over both governments. And that's certainly worked with the U.S. government. It's pretty much run by the bankers exclusively. But we'll see if China continues to play their game. Regardless, it's no accident that China seems to be the country most typically associated in the press with a new world economic order.
Vast illusions on a Populations in despair.
Boggles the mind that this diabolical economic, military, national security project is being developed. It's a means of controlling the lives of millions of people. Essentially, that's really what it is. It's the powers of authority. It's a totalitarian system. The homeland security state is also intimately related to the economic crisis. And it's interesting that if you read some of the documents of the Department of Homeland Security pertaining, let's say, to terrorism or because that's its main mandate, is the global war on terrorism at the domestic level. But they also introduce other concepts such as, quote, disgruntled employees, which presumes that disgruntled employees, people who have lost their jobs, who don't have wages, they also deal with radicals. There are various etiquettes which apply to certain categories of people which might be considered to be enemies of the state. So that, yes, this homeland security apparatus has nothing to do with combating bin Laden in his cave in Afghanistan. It has a lot to do with policing social dissent in America. And again, under the Big Brother type of mentality, that this policing is there to protect people and so on and so forth. And I think that all this is implemented under the banner of making people feel insecure, okay? You make them feel insecure, what do? They accept official interpretations. They don't question authority. They believe, they swallow the media lies. They are soft citizens in an environment which is becoming increasingly repressive. So that is perhaps what Homeland Security really is to shun people's ability to think, to analyze their predicament, and to impoverish them to such an extent that they can't even think. People who are impoverished are not in a position to become militants. They're too much concerned with their survival. So that's another aspect. capitalist system. But we don't want to necessarily describe it superficially using, you know, the normal rhetoric to describe a capitalist system, because we realize that this system is far more complex. When we bring in the shadow banking, and then we bring in the military and the CIA, and the CIA operating in the stock markets, and the role of inside information, and the role that the media plays in interpreting and analyzing the economy and presenting a certain movement of the economy, which is obviously false, like saying the recovery will come, you know, in the second quarter of next year, this kind of interpretation. Well, we come up with the conclusion that we're dealing with something which is extremely complex, which requires a much broader understanding. But ultimately, we also realize that this crisis is leading to the impoverishment of the people of this planet in a very real way. It's the globalization of poverty. It's the destruction of people's lives. It's the disengagement of resources. It's the destruction of creativity. It's a diabolical process, which is essentially predicated on the enrichment of a very small minority.
But in among this terrible poverty, there were just a few great, big, beautiful houses that were lived in by rich men who had as many as 30 servants to look after them. These rich men were called capitalists. They were fat, ugly men with wicked faces. The capitalists owned everything in the world, and everyone else was their slave. They owned all the land, all the houses, all the factories, and all the money. If anyone disobeyed them, they could throw him into prison, or they could take his job away and starve him to death. When any ordinary person spoke to a capitalist, he had to cringe and bow to him and take off his cap and address him as sir.
And our children will live, Mr. Beale, to see that perfect world in which there's no war or famine, oppression or brutality. One vast and ecumenical holding company for whom all men will work to serve a common profit, in which all men will hold a share of stock, all necessities provided, all anxieties tranquilized, all boredom amused.